Eugene Puryear is an activist and journalist with a long history of organizing protests in Washington, D.C. He knows well the power of having D.C. as the backdrop to political protest.
Oftentimes when you're in some of those central locations, what you are, you're sending a message to the country, you're sending a message to the world. These are often iconic visuals, especially the National Mall or over by the White House, that people from around the country, around the world, they know where you are, they know what it is, they know it's the seat of U.S. government, and it's the opportunity to really get your message out there in a way that takes on those national and international implications.
All that is now under threat.
So the federal government under the Trump administration has promulgated rulemaking to change and completely rewrite and revise how permits and demonstrations are handled in Washington, D.C.
Mara Verheyden-Hilliard is the executive director of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund. Her organization is tracking everything that's contained in the proposed regulation.
The proposal that they've put out is a complete overhaul of the permitting system that has been forged after decades of litigation incrementally from constitutional rights case to constitutional rights case. They are just doing a complete wholesale overhaul. And one of the proposals that they've put forward is that they want to charge demonstrators for the right to protest. It's what we're calling a protest tax. And what they have proposed is that when a group or an organization wants to demonstrate, they would assess the costs of a demonstration on the organizers.
So, in addition to paying for a permit, protesters may have to pay for things they didn't even ask for, such as barricades and fencing. Eugene Puryear describes what that could mean for an event such as the Answer Coalition's counter-protest to the Unite the Right rally in D.C. last August.
We paid $0 for the permit aspect of it. We had to raise a small, low thousands of dollars to make some of the stage and sound and things like that possible. So, I mean, it was in the reach of a grassroots organization, but if you had to pay or potentially take on the cost of policing or cleaning the park or whatever it may be, many of these different aspects that are being, you know, potentially proposed by the Park Service now, it wouldn't have been possible to do.
Verheyden-Hilliard says that extra charges to protest is just the beginning. For example, new regulations could limit the size of signs protesters could carry and wear.
And when it comes to the White House sidewalk itself, the Park Service and the Department of Interior hid in their proposed rulemaking without any announcement. We just found it because we did a line-by-line review. They're going to close the White House sidewalk to protest, leaving only a tiny little 5-foot pedestrian passageway. Now, this is the White House sidewalk where all of us can picture the demonstrations and the rallies and the pickets that have occurred there, you know, over a century. And you have those iconic photos of the suffrage movement in front of the White House, or the pictures of the women marching with signs against lynching, and the anti-war demonstrations that have stood there and marched at the fence. They're going to shut it off.
If enacted, she adds, these rules would fundamentally alter core principles about the purpose of public space in our democracy.
This turns on how do we view our public lands. The public lands belong to us. They belong to the people. And the federal government and the Park Service, they don't own the lands to dole out to us. It's not like they're private owners and they're letting us walk on their lawn. They're our lands, and their job is simply to be the stewards of those lands. That's it. But their view is that they own the lands and they're letting us stand on them for protest, which is completely incorrect. And the Supreme Court, starting with this seminal case in 1939, Hague v. Ohio, talked about our public lands and the point of view that our public spaces, our sidewalks, our parklands, and our streets have time immemorial been there for public voices, for discussion, for debate, for dissent, going back centuries. That is what public assembly, public space is about.
What can citizens do? The regulations are now open for public comment until October 15th. The Partnership for Civil Justice is working with dozens of organizations to get the word out and encourage citizens to weigh in and fight back. For WPFW News, I'm Sue Goodwin.